Okay, good evening, everybody. Lichtige Chanukah to all. What a better way to celebrate Chanukah than to share Torah together this evening. It is always an honor and pleasure, but it's mamash such an honor and zchus on the Yom Tov. I have chills when I say you're not with me, but Midvar Shekhar Tirchach, and I try and speak the MS. And I have chills when I say that what we're really celebrating on this Yom Tov is that the Yavanim, the Syrian Greeks, wanted to uproot our religion and banish our mitzvos, ulahavira michukei ritzonecha. And hodu l'Hashem ki tov ki lo mechasto. Over 2,000 years later, after the destruction of the temple, they are long gone. And we are joining together on the first night of Chanukah to learn Torah together. And that alone should really, really inspire all of us. So this year is sponsored by our friend Michelle Weiss. Hodu l'Hashem ki tov ki li olam chasto. Michelle was also one of the first ones who was part of the Shir group back in the spring. For everyone who does not know, the Shir was started back in the spring, and it grew and grew and grew, and we thought maybe we would do it for 2 weeks. I remember Miriam Goodman, our organizer, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and Michelle said to me, it's December. The Shir is still going strong. And she thinks about all the learning that takes place every Thursday night, and we are all trying to better ourselves through the Pirkei Avos learning. We're trying to improve ourselves, our midos bein adam ha-makom, bein adam ha-chavero. And she says that this is a tremendous schus. She thanks me for continuing the shir and for all of those who joined the shir and the power of Kislev. Thank you to everyone who listens and sponsors and implements the teachings into their lifestyle. So it's really Michelle sponsoring in honor of all of us. And with gratitude to the Ribbono Shel Olam for the schus of the shir and what it brings to our lives. So we thank you very, very much, Michelle. Okay, so I have to tell you what happened. I was really going to stick to Pirkei Avos. But it's Chanukah. And it's the first night of Chanukah. So I just felt I would be remiss if we did not share a Chanukah Divrei Torah. I prepared a new shir, and I think that it's most appropriate. So when we lit the candles this evening, at the end of Ma'os Tzur, Ma'os Tzur goes through Galos, really. Okay. Paro, the horses, the chariots, the riders, his army, they sunk into the depths like a stone. And we talk about Bavel, Kates Bavel, Zerubbabel. We talk about Galus Bavel. And we talk about Haman. Bikesh Agagi ben Hamdasa, that's Haman. He was hung on the tree. So we start talking about Paro. And we talk about Bavel. And we talk about Haman. And we talk about the Yinavanim. And finally, as we journey, we say, Chasof Zerah Kodshecha V'karv Ketze Yeshua Hashem, stretch out your holy arm and bring the end already. Nekom Nikmas Dam Avadecha Me'uma Harasha'a. Hashem, take the final revenge from the wicked nation. Ki Archalanu HaYeshua V'ein Ketz Li'yemei Hara'ah. Do you know on the English calendar, today, December 10th, on the English calendar, was the first anniversary of the Jersey City shooting. I myself did not know until I read in Mishpacha last week. There was a beautiful article on how supermarket owners from different cities helped Mr. Ferenz back on his feet. December 10th, 2019, was a Jersey City attack. The Yeshua is taking so long. And it doesn't seem like there's any end to these days of wicked. Dechei Admon b'tzel tzamon. Push away Admon, Admoni. Push away Esau, we're in Galus Romi. To the nether, to the depths. Hakem lanu ro'im Shiva. Please establish for us the seven shepherds. So we really ask the Ribbono Shel Olam, like he made miracles for our forefathers in those days, so he should taka make for us in our times. So I'm starting with a story from the Sefer, from the book called Heroes of Spirit by Rabbi David Hoffman. It was one of the last transports to arrive in Bergen-Belsen towards the end of World War II. There was a Jew by the name of Rav Shmelka Schnitzler, Zichron Ralevracha. He was a Hasid. He was a Torah scholar with warm, penetrating eyes. Most amazingly, he maintained a mood of cheerfulness, a rare disposition to find in the camps. He worked hard to encourage his fellow inmates at every turn to make their lives a little bit better. At the end of 1944, winter was approaching, Rav Shmelka was nagged by a compelling problem. How could he possibly obtain oil with which to kindle the lights of Chanukah? The holiday was only a few short days away. He consulted everyone who came into contact with, but no one had any oil. No one had anything that could be substituted for oil. Vishmelkel did not give into despair. The mitzvah of Chanukah was much too important to him. It would allow him to provide much-needed encouragement to the desperate Jews in the camp. On the day before Chanukah, he had to hurry to one of the barracks near the far end of camp. Just that day, someone there had died. He was assigned a job of removing the dead bodies of the many inmates who died of starvation. Not far from the fence, at the edge of the camp, he stumbled, his foot sunk into a patch of red earth, covering a small hole. It was clear that someone had dug this hole on purpose. He gazed at the shallow depression, and he saw there was a solid object buried there. He knelt down, and there was a small jar, half filled with congealed liquid. He removed the cover. He dipped his finger in. It was oil. His thoughts immediately flashed to the original Chanukah miracle of finding a single flask of oil. How could this be happening? Was he dreaming? And then he noticed some other objects, and he unwrapped a package, a swatch of cloth, 8 small cups, 8 thin strands of cotton. This was almost too impossible to believe. Someone had intentionally buried this Chanukah stash, thought Rav Shmelka. It would be too dangerous to keep the material with him till he actually needed them. Perhaps, maybe someone else would come back for them. During the next day and a half, he circulated amongst the inmates, asking whoever he could if they had concealed oil in a hiding place along with wicks. Everyone stared at him as if he had lost his mind. The next night, he removed the buried items. He set up the menorah. The Jews in the barrack crowded around as he lit the first candle. He struck the match. He recited the blessings with great emotion before touching the tiny flame to the thin wick protruding out of the little cup. It was a scene from a storybook, in stark contrast to the harsh environment of the concentration camp. It was a ray of hope. The elderly Rav Shmelka managed to survive until the Allies liberated the camp. His faith and hope had proven victorious, and in time he made the journey to the United States to pick up the shattered pieces and begin his life anew. Rav Shmelka made it a point of visiting various rabbis, receiving blessings. On one of those visits, he found himself in the home of the Holy Satmar Rebbe, Rav Yoel Teitelbaum Zatzal, who lived in Brooklyn. The Rebbe welcomed him. Rav Shmelka spoke to the Rebbe and poured out his heart. The Satmar Rebbe held his hand, delivered words of chizuk, and the Rebbe suddenly said, "Rav Shmelka, I hear you had the honor of lighting Chanukah candles in Bergen-Belsen." Rav Shmelka was surprised. How had the Rebbe known? He nodded his head as he recalled the incredible miracle. Rav Yoel bent over and whispered, "Did you ever wonder who left all those materials for your Chanukah lighting? I am the one who hid the oil, the cups and the wicks, next to the fence when I was imprisoned in Bergen-Belsen the year before you arrived, before my miraculous escape." Rav Shmelka was speechless. The Rebbe smiled. "I knew Hashem would allow the right person to find that stash at the right time to do the right thing." We're so zoche to live, Baruch Hashem, in a time, in a century, in a place where for us there's not so much Mesiras Nefesh with the Chanukah Licht. And we have to try and appreciate what those little flames represent. The Yevanim wanted to root out Ruchnius. We all know we have two kinds of enemies. The Gashmiistic kind who want to physically kill us, and the Ruchniistic kind who want to spiritually kill us. The Yevanim wanted to abolish Bris Milah, 3 primary mitzvahs, besides for Limud HaTorah. I'm going to share with you an insight that I never saw before until preparing for a session yesterday. And I think it's beautiful. It's from the Ben Ish Chai. We're getting there, okay? The Ben Ish Chai was Nifter in 1909. So the Yevanim, the Greeks under Antiochus, outlawed Torah learning. But they also outlawed 3 primary mitzvahs, Bris Milah, circumcision, Rosh Chodesh, the Kiddush HaChodesh, the sanctification of the new month, and Shabbos. These are 3 primary mitzvahs that they rooted out. Why? What do these 3 mitzvahs represent? So Eliyahu Kitov, in his Sefer HaTodaah, the Book of Our Heritage, explains why the Greeks specifically wanted to root out these 3 mitzvahs specifically. Shabbos symbolizes the world has a creator. The world has a creator. And every time we are Mechabed Shabbos and Mekadeh Shabbos and Shomer Shabbos, so we prove to the world, we remind the world that we believe in the Ribbono Shel who created this whole world. And just like he worked and then rested, Kaviyachal, so to Vahalach the Bedrachav, we go in his ways, we work and we rest. I remember that everything is in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Working on Shabbos is not going to help me. Adarab will be detrimental. I'm going to have whatever Hashem wants me to have. And Shabbos symbolizes the world has a creator. So the Greeks wanted to say the world does not have a creator. So no Shabbos. You are God. You create yourself. You're answerable only to yourself. There's no higher being. There's no accountability. There's no creator. If there's no creator, man becomes God. So the Greeks said no Shabbos, no creator. No Mila. What does Mila represent? It's first given, of course, to Avraham Avinu, Parshas Lech Lecha, right at the end of the Parsha, on Perek Yud Zayin, His Halech Lafan Evehei Etamim. And when a baby comes into Bris Mila at the eighth day, we say that Achniso Bevisos Shal Avraham Avinu, the first patriarch who established the Umma Yisraelis, made a covenant with God, or I should say God made a covenant with the first patriarch. And what does Mila represent? That our bodies are kadosh. Our bodies are not profane. Our bodies have kedusha. We're subjugated to the Ribbono Shel Olam in our physicality. There are halachos of using the facilities. There are halachos of eating. There are halachos of dress. There are halachos that govern our bodies. So we say the body has kedusha. The Greeks say the body has no kedusha. The body's profane. Run naked in the Olympics. Ashes Potiphar. No wonder Yosef's story is read by Hanukkah. Always, always, always. Not a mistake. Be with whoever you want, whenever you want, however you want. There's no kedusha to your guf. Therefore, they wanted to destroy Bris Mila because Bris Mila proves we have kedusha. Kedusha is a guf. Not only are neshama holy, we strive our whole lives to elevate our guf as well, to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Greeks said, no Shabbos. The world does not have a creator. No Bris Mila. The body is not kadosh. And finally, no Rosh Chodesh. What is the Jewish approach to time? Time is the most precious gift that man has. Because every second, that's a whole shir in and of itself. Because every moment is beyond fleeting. And time has intrinsic value. Because we can accomplish so much with our time. The Greeks said time is profane. Time passes by. Enjoy life! Whatever you want to do in the here and now, do here in the here and now. Every single day she said, Shichva imi. Lay with me, my body is mine, I'm not answerable to God, and time is profane. And therefore, Velio Kitov says, this is why the Greeks wanted to eliminate specifically these three mitzvos. No Shabbos, the world does not have a creator. No Bris Mila, the body is not kadosh. No Rosh Chodesh, time is profane. So of course, Baruch Hashem, millennia later, we still have Shabbos, we still have Rosh Chodesh, we still have Bris Mila. And Kitov points out that that's why, ready? Hanukkah is always one of my favorite Hanukkah Divrei Torah. I think I tell it over every year. And I love it every time. That's why Hanukkah is 8 days long. Because Bris Mila is done on the eighth day to show the triumph of Bris Mila over our enemies. That's why Hanukkah always has a Shabbos. There's always a Shabbos Hanukkah. They wanted to root out Shabbos. We testify the world has a creator and we celebrate Shabbos Hanukkah. And finally, what was the last one they wanted to uproot? Rosh Chodesh. We always have Rosh Chodesh during Hanukkah to show that these three mitzvos that they wanted to root out are interwoven into the very fabric of this Yom Tov because it's a spiritual Yom Tov. And yes, we eat donuts and they're delicious. And yes, we eat latkes. And yes, we have family gatherings. And this year things are going to be unfortunately very, very different from many because of the COVID pandemic. And we make it into a fun Yom Tov. But the essence of the Yom Tov is the spiritual victory over the Yevanim. We should never be tested, but that one Jew in Bergen-Belsen, because we're here, and ultimately they're not. And it's a triumph not only of Am Yisrael, but Torah Yisrael. And therefore, Kitov says, Mila, eighth day, Chanukah is 8 days on. No Shabbos, we always have a Shabbos Chanukah. No Rosh Chodesh, Chas V'Shalom, we always celebrate Rosh Chodesh. So yesterday when I was preparing for a different session, I came across something very interesting that I had never seen before. Put that aside for 1 minute. We're going to come back to the insight that we just spoke about from Kitov. There is, both the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah quote, there is a tradition to eat cheese on Chanukah. Melechek, there's a tradition to eat melechek on Chanukah. So I was looking into it yesterday. Why do we eat melechek on Chanukah? So some of you may be familiar with the basic story. I'm not a historian. I'm sure that there might be more to that in-depth details that I don't know. But there was a woman named Yehudis. Who was she? She was the son. You know, we say B'yemei Matisyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol Chashmonai Uvanav. So Matisyahu was from the Chashmonai family, and his sons became the Maccabim. But he was the son of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. This Yehudis was the daughter of Yochanan the Kohen Gadol, so she was a sister of Matisyahu. So you imagine that, you know, 2,300 years ago, 2,200 years ago, they weren't conscripting women into the war, but she wanted to fight. She wanted to do her part to help the Hashmonai family bring down the oppressor and the aggressor. So this Yehudis, again, the daughter of Yochanan the Kohen Gadol, which makes her the sister of Matisyahu, she befriended an attractive, lovely woman, and she befriended the Greek general Holofernes. Holofernes was taken by this woman, and she befriended him. And one fine day, she made a date, and she shows up at his tent with a picnic. And the picnic included very salty cheese and wine. 1 second, please. You need something? Salty cheese and wine. So she fed him the salty cheese. Hold on, I'm sorry. 1 second, please. What? I can't hear you. I don't know. Is it disturbing me? No. Can you hear ping pong in the background from my basement? No, they can't hear, Shmuel. It's fine. Just shut the door, please. But just don't scream. Thank you. So Yehudis, this sister of Matisyahu, seduced Holofernes, and she took him wine and cheese. Not in that order, cheese and wine. She fed him very salty cheese. And when he was thirsty, she gave him wine. He became tired and drunk. When he passed out, she cut off his head. So she was just as courageous, if you will, as her brother Matisyahu and his sons, the Maccabim. And she cut off his head. And because she assassinated one of the leaders of the army, it was easier for the Maccabim to win the war. And so we eat dairy to remember Yehudis. So when you have your Hanukkah Seuda, if it is a dairy meal, you should keep in mind this Yehudis and her bravery and her courage. So the Ben Ish Chai, who died in 1909, says something very interesting. Remember the Vart I just told you about Kitov, Chodesh, Shabbos, and Mila? My mom never saw this before yesterday. So the Ben Ish Chai says as follows. Chalav, Chet, Lamed, Beis. Ches, Lamed, Beis, or Chet, Lamed, Bet. Okay, Chodesh. The first letter of Chodesh is a Ches. Shabbos, the second letter of Shabbos is a Beis. Mila, the third letter of Mila is a Lamed. With me, Chodesh, first letter is Ches. Shabbos, these are the mitzvahs they wanted to eradicate, if you will. Shabbos, the second letter is a Beis. Mila, the third letter is a Lamed. Those three letters, so my mom is not making this up, okay? So those three letters spell Chalav. So here is another reason why we eat dairy. We remember that Mila, not in that order, Chodesh, Shabbos, and Mila still exist today because of the Chalav that brave Yehudis fed Holofernes and led to the downfall of the Greeks. So, Afhein, Hayu, Ba'oso, Hanes. When you say that women are Chayav in the Hanukkah Licht, and they too were part of the miracle, not only were we part of being saved from the enemy, but you have to remember the courageous valor of the Nashim Tzidkanius in every generation who would go to great lengths. I was also thinking something very interesting, which I did not see brought down. Do I need to type that on the chat, or is it clear to everybody? Because it's really nice. Okay? Chodesh, Shabbos, Mila. Ches from Chodesh, Beis from Shabbos, Lamed from Mila spells Chalav. So one of the reasons we have dairies to commemorate that we still have Chodesh, Shabbos, and Mila because of the Chalav that Yehudis fed Holofernes. So I think that's something very interesting, that the miracle came about through a woman specifically. And chalav is something that we associate with a woman. A woman nurtures her child biologically through her milk, through her mother's milk. Gives the baby chalav. Hashem makes the mother's milk very specific for the child. It's fascinating. When I had very premature babies, it's something that I learned, that mother's milk of premature babies is much higher in fat and lipids and whatever else they need than full-term mother's milk. So the mother physically nourishes her child through her chalav. And I think that it's interesting here that spiritually, Yehudis' act of valor through chalav continues to sustain us to this day. And when we have the Shabbos Chanukah, when we have Rosh Chodesh, when we have 8 days, we should remember Afhein Hayu Ba'oso Hanes. So Yehudis was instrumental in bringing about the miracle of Hanukkah, and it is a koach that hopefully has transferred to all of us. We have to work on our courage. We have to work. We should never be put in such a position. But to never have a sense of yeush, that is the nashim tzidkanius in every generation that continue to sustain through chalav, physically, giving the baby the chalav, and spiritually through this adhesion to Torah, to mitzvot, to the understanding that the enemy can be overcome. I'm now going to quote from an essay by Rabbi Dr. Norman Lam, Zichron al-Bracha. It is called Festivals of Faith, Reflection on the Jewish Holidays. I didn't check the comments, but I see there's two, so one moment, please. Those are my three favorite Chanukah emojis. I take them a lot during Chanukah that are on the chat. Okay, so here we go. So this is Rabbi Dr. Norman Lam. This was a drasha delivered, it says 2009, much more recent. Usually when I quote from it, it's like from the 1970s. I didn't even realize when I was preparing. It's called On the Threshold. Okay, in the discussion of the proper placement of the Chanukah menorah, so where is one supposed to light the menorah? The Gemara Masecha Shabbos Chof Beis decides in favor of one must place the menorah at the left of the doorstep. One must place the menorah at the left of the doorpost as one enters. So as you enter, the menorah should be to the left of the doorpost with the mezuzah on the right. So Bekitzer, when you enter, you have the mezuzah on the right, and you have the Chanukah lich, the menorah on the left. The Rambam writes, Rabbi Dr. Lam, I didn't look up the source, I'm just going with Rabbi Dr. Lam, Maimonides codifies this halacha almost verbatim in Hilchos Chanukah. So when you enter, you have the mezuzah on the right, and the menorah should be on the left of the doorpost. So Rabbi Dr. Lam says, hashkafically, besides for the halacha, what do we learn from this? What drove Chazal in the Gemara and the Rambam, Maimonides, to focus on Pesach Habayit. What is so significant about placing the Chanukah lech by Pesach Habayit, the entrance to the home? What makes the doorpost, the threshold between the outside and the inside, so important in this halacha? What we're really talking about is the threshold. The doorpost represents, think of your front door, the threshold between the outside of your home and the inside of your home. And why were Chazal so intent on teaching us that the Chanukah lich must be placed at the threshold to your home? What is so significant? If indeed the point is you must feel surrounded by mitzvos, right? So you want to say the Chanukah lich, you're surrounded by mitzvos. So why not declare you should kindle the Chanukah lich while wearing a talit? You should wear a talis, and then you'll be cloaked in mitzvos. Or, and this is what he says, I'm not being sarcastic. He's saying facetiously, what is so important about the mezuzah here, the Chanukah lich here, right at the doorpost? Or use some other method to feel enveloped in the sanctity of mitzvos. What is so significant about the threshold or the doorpost of the home? Furthermore, there is a similar question posed by the Pnei Yehoshua. Why does the Gemara say that the mitzvah of Chanukah refers specifically to the home? It is a mitzvah that's intrinsically Chanukah, the menorah tied to the bayis. Why? And by the way, I find this very interesting because the bayis is also a metaphor in Chumash for the woman, the wife. So when we talk about chalav, that she sustains, I mean, it's a biological fact that the woman sustains the child through her milk. And we see through Yehudis that she spiritually sustains the nation also through chalav, in that case, a spiritual milk. Yeah, she gave him cheese, but it has a spiritual connotation, the ches, the beis, the lamed, chodesh, shabbos, milah, says the Ben Ish Chai. So it's interesting that Chanukah lich is specifically a mitzvah related to the bayis, the threshold, the Pesach habayis, Petach habayit, and also the bayis, the home. This mitzvah is treated differently from every other mitzvah that we perform with our bodies and refers to us as individuals. But here, specifically with Chanukah, we are referring to a connection between the licht and our homes. Why? I suggest, says Rabbi Dr. Lam, that the threshold, the Petach Habayis, why should it be consistent? Petach Habayit or Pesach Habayis is a symbol of instability and doubt. The Pesach Habayis, listen carefully. The threshold is a symbol of instability and doubt, of confusion and diffidence. On the threshold, a person stands between the inside and the outside, undecided. Should I stay in or should I go out? Certainly, that's something we could relate to with this COVID pandemic, which is still ongoing. We all remember back in the spring. Today, most of us, maybe not all due to health conditions or other situations, most of us do go out to get what we need, fully masked. We don't socialize in this house. We're very, very careful, but I do go out to get what I need. But I remember back in the beginning, I was not going out at all. at all. The threshold represents you're poised between the outside and the inside. Should I go out or should I stay in? The threshold is often found as a symbol in Tanakh. And now he mentions the story of Yosef, which I already touched upon because it's not an accent. It's Yosef's story is always bold, capital, underline, always. Yosef's story is the story of Hanukkah. You already mentioned Ishus Potiphar. There's no God, so I could do whatever I want. My body is not Kadosh, so I could be with whomever I want. Time is profane, so live in the moment. That was Ishus Potiphar. No Shabbos, no Milah, in terms of what they represent. No Chodesh. I'm God over myself. He points out a different connection here. In the Yosef story, the brothers are frightened, next week's parasha, as they are ushered into the palace of Yosef. They approach the official in charge as they speak from the Pesach Habayis. They are hesitant, wavering between protesting and keeping silent. When Lot goes out to face the angry mob in Bereishis Perek Yates, he speaks from the threshold of his house, unsure how to treat this unholy gathering of men of Sodom, uncertain as to whether he will survive the encounter or not. The threshold represents, you know, when times are stable and things are calm, we don't think so much about leaving our house. But the reality is that the threshold represents a transition from inside to outside, from stability to instability, from security to lack of security. Should I go out or should I not go out? And there are times when we don't want to leave. Lot is unsure, so he addresses them from the entrance to the home, unsure of what he should do. Will he survive? Earlier, when Cain is When Cain is irate at the divine reaction to his offering, Cain who killed Hevel back in Perek Dalet, he is told if he will not improve his ways, who remembers the Lashon? Lepetach chatat rovetz. Lepetach chatas rovetz. Sin crouches at the Pesach, at the entrance. Sin will crouch, he is told, at his Pesach, the symbol of uncertainty. The Eitzah Hara is crouching at the threshold. Man is always vacillating between yielding to the Eitzah Hara and heroically overcoming his lust. Yosef almost gave in to his Eitzah Hara, but he overcame and he ran outside. He managed to flee over the threshold. Vayanas achutza. He overcomes the Eitzah Hara and he flees. So does the Chanukah contain this symbol of the irresolute. The Rambam, in his Egeret Hashmad, writes of harsh evil decrees of the Greek authorities. And one of the harsh evil decrees of the Greek authorities, writes the Rambam, was, one of which was, one should not shut the door of his Petach Habayis. The Greek said, you should not shut the door of your Petach Habayit, lest he exploit the privacy of his home to perform mitzvah. So the Greeks wanted an open door policy. They wanted to see what you were doing right inside of your home. So your threshold should be now become the outside. Your inside should be the outside. Everyone should see. Everyone should know. You should have no privacy in your home. The Greek said, as recorded by the Rambam in his Igeres Hashmad, that the Greek said, you should not shut the door of the Petach Habayit, lest he exploit the privacy of his home to perform mitzvahs. This left the Jews of that era in deep and frightening doubt. Yield to the Greeks and avoid death. The Petach represents the doubt. Or defy the Greeks and keep the faith. Hence the connection between Chanukah and the threshold and the bias. The Greeks wanted to gain entry not into our public lives, but also into our private lives, into our home lives. The Hashkafa should permeate everything that we do. Where do we davka today, light the Chanukah lech? By Pesach HaBayis. Let everyone see we overcame. But they said, don't even close the door to your home. Let our perverted, pagan, unholy, corrupt ways dictate how you live inside your home. And I think it ties in so beautifully to the first part of Shir, where we spoke about the courage of the woman. Because the Akaras HaBayis really regulates the Pesach HaBayis. And it's through her chalav that she not only physically sustains her family and Knesset Yisrael, but spiritually upholds Chodesh, Shabbos, Milah, Ches, Beis, Lamed, or Ches, Lamed, Beis, to sustain us with that spiritual milk. How beautiful that Eretz Yisrael is known as Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. It's not only a land that is beautiful aesthetically, And it is a land that oozes milk to spiritually sustain us. To return to our original theme, says Rabbi Dr. Lam. By the way, I never even saw this essay until I prepared this year. It's very beautiful. The threshold has two supports, the mezuzah to the right and the Chanukah menorah to the left. The mezuzah represents the inside of the home, guarding all that has been taken with into the home. It is affixed to the right upon entering. The mezuzah affixed to the right upon entering. It represents the safeguard of everything that is inside the home. The halacha insists the entrance must contain a door to properly fulfill the mitzvah of mezuzah. And the mezuzah pleads, as it were, for a closed door. The mezuzah says, close your door to the outside. Let me guard what is inside this home. Let me keep it safe from the pagan world. Shomer dalasos Yisrael. You have to close the dalas sometimes, and you have to know when to close the dalas. And that's represented in the koach of the mezuzah. Our home should not always be an open door policy to the whole entire world. There's full of schmutz in that whole world. There's yavanim in that world. There's no Shabbos, no Mila, no Chodesh in that very pagan world. So the mezuzah at the threshold says, come inside. Shomer dalasos Yisrael, close the door. Build an abode for you and God. On the other hand, the Chanukah lech, the Chanukah lights, argue for an open door policy. Their function is pirsumei nisa. We put them in the same threshold and we say, let everybody see. Let illuminate the street outside with our sanctity. This collision on the threshold. Should we shut the doors and guard what is within? Should we open the door wide and share with the outside world? This clash of opposing tendencies may create a tension. It is only when we have two mitzvot around us, when you stand between the mezuzah, which represents the interior, and the Chanukah lech, which represents pirsumei nisa, share with the world, the exterior, if you will, that we have the balance. We can't always be closed. We live in a world. We have to sometimes leave the threshold of our home. But we can't always be open. We have to know when it's time to come home. Come back to our threshold. Surround ourselves with the Kedushas Habayis, as promulgated by the Akeras Habayis. And she feeds her family, like Yehudis did, with Chalav. That we will hopefully consume on Chanukah with much more meaning, perhaps, than before. It is only when we have these two mitzvot around us, concludes Rabbi Dr. Lam, that we can properly weigh and measure and know when to open the doors to the outside world, which is the pirsumei nisa aspect of the Chanukah lech. It's on the left as you exit. And to absorb from the world what is good and true and beautiful. And on the other hand, we have to know when to shut the doors. The mezuzah represents the interior of the home. When to shut the doors tight against the falsehood, the profanity of an ungodly world and its nefarious influences. And this all occurs at the Pesach Habayis, at the threshold. There are times of indecision, but a Jew always has to know that the interior is and should remain holy, and at times you have to close the door. And at times we have to leave the home, but we can take the Kedusha, the Pirsumei Nisa, along with us and really influence ourselves and the whole world, as long as we're careful to know the balance. How apropos that it tells us about Yosef HaTzadik, when Potiphar is attempting every day to seduce him, and she almost gets him. Yosef's story is always, did I emphasize that already? Yes. Rabbi, the story of Chanukah. What does it say about Yosef HaTzadik? How does he get away from her? Vayanas hachutza. A person has to know when to remain in, when to go out, when it is kosher here, when it is treif there, where I belong. And we always remember Yehudis, who fed Halifornis the cheese, who gave him the wine to drink, who chopped off his head, which doesn't sound so feminine, but that act of courage, that act of bravery, continues to sustain us down to today. So, af hein hayu ba'oso hanes, no wonder women are obligated in the Chanukah lecht. And it's not an accident that we are told, b'schus nashim tzidkanu sheba'oso adar negal Yisrael mitzrayim. And how do we begin the ma'oz tzur? By talking about Paro Mitzrayim. And then we move on to Bavel. And then we talk about Haman. And then we talk about the Yevanim. But they're all gone. And we're all here. And what a better way to celebrate Hanukkah together, even if we can't be in person in this year, and to come together and to share some Torah as we're mechazik ourselves, we're mechazik our homes, we fortify ourselves, knowing when to remain in, knowing when to remain out. Ezra Hashem, Chasov Zerol Kodshecha, V'kariv Keitz HaYeshua, Ki Archa Lanu HaYeshua, V'ein Keitz Liyumei HaRa'ah. That the end will come, and as women who are part of the miracle, we know and we believe. Ani Mamin, Aleph Mem. I think my daughter told me this. I think the name of Rabbi Ephraim Shapiro. Aim. It is the aim be Israel who will bring the Geula. Aleph Mem. And every Geula happened with the Aleph Mem. From Paro, Aharon, Moshe. From Haman, who we also mentioned in the Ma'oz Tzur, Esther, Mordechai. And ultimately, B'yamos HaMashiach, Aleph Mem, Eliyahu, and Melech HaMashiach. And it is the Amuna of the Imahot, the Aim B'Yisrael, like Yehudas, who against all odds, I mean, I can't imagine ever having to do such a thing. I don't know if I would be so brave. Against all odds, along with her family, she took matters into her own hands quite literally. And Ezra Hashem, we should be zocha to see the final Aleph Mem, the Animamin Av, Eliyahu and Mashiach Tzidkenu, Yavovi, Galenu, Bimher, Bimino. I thank Michelle Weiss very, very much for being with us from the beginning and continuing to learn. And she really sponsored the shiur as a karsu tov to Ribbono Shalom, and also in admiration of all the women who dedicate themselves to this shiur. I wish you a very lichtige Chanukah, an uplifting and meaningful Chanukah, a wonderful 8 days, a good Shabbos, and a gittin chodesh to all. Thank you so much. I'm going to address the...